them out. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They making plans, we sit and count. Our chair is stacked just like a mountain. You heard about it, she running her mouth.
What day is it?
It's Wednesday.
What city am I in?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Great. I'm going to rely on you going forward, Joshy, to keep track of that for me, okay?
Got it. I'm locked in.
I was in Lubbock on Monday. I was at Auburn yesterday.
Okay.
Got home around 9 o'clock. And I thought, what do I have tomorrow? Jen Cave and Chewy.
Uh-huh.
And no Chewy, as he is. Is he gallivanting yet?
He's gallivanting, yes. He is on his international trip.
Lederhosen and whatnot.
Lederhosen and all.
Yeah. Gabe is out today. We got Will, the thrill, behind the glass this morning.
What's up?
Yeah, that seems about right. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
How are we doing?
Good to see you. And Joshy hanging out with me. I'll just, going forward, I need to, like, know where I am, what I'm doing. It's that part of the year. It's that time of year where things get a little chaotic.
Will Friday be a new city, or will it be a return to Lubbock or Auburn?
No, Miami.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not exactly an international tour, but a tour nonetheless.
Yes. Very different portions of the country between Milwaukee, Miami, and Lubbock.
And Auburn.
Yeah. Auburn is, you could put it in the South, but it's not the same as Miami.
The highlight of my Auburn trip yesterday, and by the way, I don't do this very often, guys, but the story that we're going to tell on Saturday on College Game Day, this athlete from Auburn, blew my mind. I'll tell you during the break because, it's just incredible. Maybe at some point I'll be able to talk a little bit more about it, but I'm just in the first couple of stages of the storytelling. Exactly. So, but I stopped by Buckey's.
Oh.
Did you get
a brisket sandwich?
Of course I did. And I got a brisket sandwich. I got a fruit cup. Thought about the banana pudding and was like, I don't know. It's a little messy for the car. Ate my brisket sandwich. And then after my interviews, went back to Buckey's.
Wow.
Brought some brisket back for the fam. So threw it in a bag. And I went straight to the airport and then brought it home last night and they housed the brisket. I keep telling everybody, Buc-ee's is legit. I know there's people who want to push back. I know there's a whole group of people out there who are like, say no to Buc-ee's. Huge fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of anything that is, it's a monolithic in the way that Buc-ee's is. Quick Trip also has the same thing about it where you can find whatever you need. You can have yourself a meal. You can do all the things you need to do. It's just a gas station on steroids.
One stop shop,
you know?
But it's got the t-shirts and it's got the home decor. It's got all of that good stuff. Coffee wall, beef jerky wall.
Do you ever see yourself venturing into the home decor portion to bring anything home?
Well, it's funny because my initial reaction was no. My initial reaction was, of course not. I'm not buying home decor at Buc-ee's. But they did have a lovely wall of Cardinal stuff. They've already got their holiday stuff out at Buc-ee's. And a lovely, and my mom is very into Cardinals, loves the baseball team, loves the bird. It has some sentimental value as well. And so I did slow my roll as I was walking past and do a little longer glance at the Cardinal section of Buc-ee's yesterday.
I envision very home is where the heart is coated decor for the house, those little
live,
signs.
Laugh, love. Yes. Yeah, the stuff they make fun of in those progressive commercials. Yes. How many non-sponsors can we mention this morning in the first segment of the show? So a little Buc-ee's action yesterday during our story at Auburn for College Game Day on Saturday morning. But I saw that our buddy Mark Tauscher had a very eventful day. Very eventful day. At the Brewers game last night, what would you say Good Karma Brands now is for first pitches? When you throw Alex Strofen, when you throw Michelle Smallman in, when you throw Mark Tauscher, are we over?
Also, we have to add company president Steve Pollitt Sr. He used to host Stephen Craig.
Yep.
In Madison, I should say. I don't believe they were ESPN Madison at that time. He also has a concerted or a definite flub at throwing out the first pitch. Evan Cohen, though, I believe has delivered strikes in his first pitch attempts. So we're about 1 for 6 or 7.
I'm glad we found the one.
Yeah.
I'm glad we have at least one that we can hang our hat on. Since I was not a member of Good Karma Brands when I threw out my first pitches for the Chicago White Sox, it was like a dozen years ago.
I think we need
so.
To take it, though.
we should take it.
We got to get all the W's.
We're trying to fix the books. Cook the books.
We need everything we can get. Yeah.
Cook the books. So we're showing it on the YouTube stream this morning. Remember, you can always follow the show on YouTube, ESPN Milwaukee. And of course, you can listen here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. But I had high hopes. I guess my expectations for the big guy were higher than what he delivered. I feel like that's the most gentle way of saying, oh, no.
I think his expectations were much higher. There was on Wilde and Tausch yesterday, 9 to noon across ESPN Wisconsin. They talked about, he said he had to throw it from the mound. They say traditionally they tell you to go in front of the mound, deliver the pitch that way. And the mound does bring a dynamic most people are not accustomed to because you are elevated, the ground is uneven. And the most frequent throw you see is this throw you see from Mark Tauscher on the stream right now. You can also go to the Wilde and Tausch Twitter account to watch that if you're unable to pull up our stream at the moment. But he talked a lot about it, and he said he had to throw it from the mound. And they warned him, what happens is you short hop it. What I didn't anticipate, because I think you can short hop it like right at the plate, and people are like, yeah, whatever. I see pitchers do that. But not making the dirt is tough.
It's a tough look. I agree. And, and to be fair, again, as I'm watching it here on the YouTube stream, if you haven't seen it yet, you can certainly watch it there as well. It does sort of get right to the edge, to the grass, dirt edge.
It seems to pop it up nice and easy for the catcher.
Yeah, it looked really good. But you saw him do the old clap right afterwards, and that was a dang it clap. That's what that was. So I think he was disappointed. The mound is the variable. The mound is the thing that nobody can you consider it because you know you're throwing off a mound. I threw off the mound for both of my first pitches for the White Sox. And similarly, I knew to throw high. Your release point has to be higher than you would think it would be. If you try to release at the catcher, like from a plane standpoint, you're screwed.
Right, because you're aiming down because of the depth perception and the change in elevation makes you think you need to be aiming lower. That is not the case.
I did see him take some very deliberate deep breaths as he was walking to the mound. The thing I told Michelle Smallman, our colleague who, of course, works on Unsportsmanlike, big Wisconsin sports fan. You saw her adventures this past weekend as they went to the Packers game and she went to the Brewers game and was out at Pfizer Forum as well. I told her, make sure you throw beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I told her something else. I told her something else that was certainly more. Make sure you throw beforehand just to get your arm warmed up. And there was something else I told her, and now I completely forgot it. God bless America.
I wasn't privy to that conversation. Does it make it any tougher for Tausch that Greg Gard threw out a pitch directly before him and threw an absolute strike?
Oh, I remembered what it was. But yes, let me answer that first. Yes, tougher. Because if the person before you either sends it,
airmails it
to the net, or, you know, does a 50 cent. It's so funny that 50 cent is now synonymous with horrible ceremonial first pitches, by the way. Yeah, pressure's off a little because it's like, well, that's what they just saw. I can do better than that. But when the person before you throws a strike, then it amplifies, it ratchets up that pressure a little bit.
Do you think Tausch felt that pressure? Because, I mean, he's played it in some extremely large venues and meaningful games, very important games.
Yeah.
But it seems like, as an offensive lineman, nobody's really looking at you the same way they're looking at, say, the running back or the quarterback. You're not the focal point. You're one of five down there.
Fair.
And you're hardly ever the focus, the center of attention, unless you have a flag thrown on you. But even then, in the stadium, most people aren't really looking for, oh, they're 65.
And that point that you're making actually dovetails perfectly well into what I forgot that I was going to say that I just remembered that I wrote down in case I forgot it again. Okay. And that is, nobody's really watching.
Yeah.
And that's what I told Michelle. Like, you're out there so far in advance of actual first pitch. A lot of people are still at the concession stands. A lot of people are mingling. They're on their phones. Like, even though they make the announcement saying, you know, throwing out a ceremonial first pitch, Packers Super Bowl champion, Mark Tauscher. I bet you there's about a third of the people who are going to be watching the games who maybe look up or look over from what they're doing to take in that moment.
I'm trying to recall the amount of times I've even witnessed it firsthand the first
pitch.
Like
you've been in your seat.
And paying attention.
Yeah,
because oftentimes you're talking to the people next to you. It's before the game. A lot of times you don't even really recognize who the person is because they're some sort of, you know, they're part of a charity and they're one of three or four people who throw out a pitch first pitch that day. But I can totally understand how walking or jogging to the mound, hearing your name called, hearing a cheer, and then thinking, oh no, everybody's looking at me, that could lead to some nerves getting a hold of you. Because, I mean, Tausch was a good baseball player before he made his career football. He also has been throwing BP for his kid who he coaches baseball. Now, you're not throwing off a mound, and you're not throwing as far away. But these are all, it's not like that was the first time he really picked up a baseball and gave it a wing.
So if we had to power rank, Tausch, Smalls, Strofe, what's your order? Will, give me some power rankings music. Here comes Strofe. We're showing it on the YouTube stream as well. Because he airmailed it, right? Like, it looks like it goes over the catcher. I'm watching it here.
Yeah,
on the stream.
It goes over the head of a leaping Ben Brust, over the mascot, and over, you'll notice there's a golden retriever there. I don't know if you know anything about golden retrievers, but they were bred in the 1860s.
Well, does the retriever part fit here?
Specifically to hunt birds. So they are known and they're bred to find flying objects, and that dog is left dumbfounded. It says, where'd the ball go? So that one is particularly remarkable. What I'm trying to decide is the airmail or the short hop worse?
Ooh.
Because I think the short hop, I think it's more common and more accepted.
You also have to take into account the pre-throw activities that Alex Strofe did. He fake spit behind the mound.
He tried to shake off the catcher. Like, he got theatrical with it. So I think we're going to do the three that are most recent. I think Tausch is three. Smallman three hopping is tough. I'm putting her at two. And then Alex Strofe nearly hitting the backstop on a fly.
Wait, is this from worst to best or best to worst?
Which one is the worst is number one. So the worst,
Strofe
most embarrassing,
worst.
Yes.
Then Smalls.
Yes.
Then Tausch.
Yes.
We need to find all of the submissions. And I have, after Smallman told us that she was going to be throwing out the first pitch at the Milwaukee Brewers game this weekend, I scoured the internet looking for my first pitches from the Chicago White Sox. Couldn't find them.
Uh-huh.
So I might need to make a call down to the south side of Chicago.
The archives.
And see if they can, you know, excavate that from the archives. Because there is a part of me that thinks people think that I'm fabricating. I almost said BSing.
You can say BSing. You just can't say the word.
Well, no, I almost said the word.
Yeah, well, that's a problem.
I'm glad
you stopped yourself.
Fabricating how well my first pitches went. And I've told you guys this before. It was a contest. It was a bracket of all the media members who covered the team. And then it was, you threw the first pitch against someone else, and based on whoever had the best first pitch, they did a bracket that narrowed it down to the champion. Maybe you guys are familiar with Lawrence Holmes in Chicago, who has been, I believe, on the score for years and years and years. He actually won, but I believe he also played baseball.
Yes,
I believe
that's a good help.
That's on his resume. So you couldn't just go out there and screw around, is my point, or you'd be eliminated.
How many rounds did you make?
Well, so that's the thing. So I threw two. So obviously I made it, I had the first round and I won the first round, and then I made it through the second. I think I lost the second round.
Yeah.
I think that's when I had to go up against Lawrence, actually, if I'm remembering correctly, who went on to win it. 800-990-3776. We are power ranking the Good Karma brand's first pitches as of late. And Joshie asks a great question. If someone's throwing out a first pitch, what's worse, airmailing it to the net, like our friend Alex Strofe, or hopping it, whether it be one or three to the catcher? Let us know, 800-990-3776. We got a lot of stuff going on this morning on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We have Adam Schefter. Got a lot of questions for Adam, including what's going on with the backup quarterback position in Green Bay. We'll talk about Jaden Reed. He obviously had surgery, collarbone and foot. The old BOGO, I suppose. What, right?
Uh-huh.
Buy one, get one. And plenty more to get to, including the Packers ranked number one in various publications' power rankings this week after starting the season 2-0. All that and more coming up on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We've enjoyed having Professional Construction Inc. help with our home projects. You know, we're not the most handy people. We can tolerate a small project here or there. But for the big things, we always rely on our friends over at PCI. And why wouldn't we, guys? They are so talented. They're so experienced. They build relationships and they do exceptional work on our projects. You can learn more about joining their team and see their work at their website. It's professionalconstructioninc.com, professionalconstructioninc.com, and tell Mike and Michelle that Jen from Jen, Gabe, and Chewy sent you.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Did you know that fact, though?
No, I didn't.
You didn't know that fact?
Is that just a fact, Brig?
Yeah. I mean, that's what Chewy does. Chewy knows the most facts of anyone on the show.
He also knows the most fiction.
On 94.5 ESPN.
It's a Wendorf Wednesday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. At Tony Wendorf & Associates' First Weber Group, they believe in the human side of real estate. Faith, family, friends. They move fast, negotiate with confidence, and communicate clearly so their clients win. No matter if it's buying or selling, get started today at wendorfteam.firstweber.com. Nailed that URL, guys.
Well, and to be fair, the guy who's usually sitting in that chair.
Yeah, the chair.
Not. Yeah. You think it's the chair's fault, huh?
Yes, possibly.
You overcame the chair is what you're telling us?
Yep.
Listening to a little Steely Dan here, I just watched that Yacht Rock documentary on one of my many airplane rides over the last 48 hours. Very good. Very good. Really enjoyed it. Delightful is the word that I used to describe it to some pals. Why are you making that face?
Is Steely Dan not adversarial to the Yacht Rock moniker or one of the more famous yacht rockers?
You might be right about that, honestly. You might be right that there was not a lot of it's the title, it's the name Yacht Rock that apparently like gets everybody all upset. But there were a ton of guys from that era, that genre, who were into it, who were in the documentary, and you would never believe the web that like Toto, did you know that Toto, you know, Africa, Hold the Line, they were performing on Michael Jackson's Thriller album.
Huh.
They were the musicians for the instruments. Like, who knew?
I didn't know that.
I watched the documentary. Let's talk about Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed had surgery to address not one, but two issues that he was dealing with. Of course, we've been talking about the foot for weeks. And then, of course, he came up with the collarbone injury in the victory this past, I guess it was last week already, against Washington. So Jaden Reed had surgery yesterday. Here's what Jaden Reed had to say after his procedure, guys.
You got a whole bunch of people on here. You want to turn it off? Tell them hi. Tell them that you're
Pack
good.
Pack us to the bowl, bro.
Okay.
Bruh.
Tell them you good. And then we're going to
I'm good. Thank you for the prayers, bro. But we turned, bro. Okay. We going all the way, bro.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, Jaden Reed obviously in high spirits. And high being the operative word there, Joshy, after his procedure. I love that we got to see that. It made me chuckle a little bit. Anybody who's had surgery knows that that can be some funny moments, you know, for those around if you're coming down off of the anesthesia. Have you ever had a surgery where you've been on anesthesia,
Joshy? I've never been put under.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I have. I've been goofy.
Yeah.
Never recorded it, though, by the way. That is the... the important detail there.
That to me is always fascinating that people, especially athletes with so much on the line, allow to go live. I mean, you could say anything.
Huge gamble.
I've seen incredibly risque things said.
If you had to rank the top three worst times to go live on Instagram, I think that would crack the top three.
Yeah.
Well, there's naked time.
Shannon Sharp.
Don't do that. Don't do that. But yeah, this is up there. My daughter broke her wrist last summer. And so we were at Children's Hospital in Tulsa for a long time. Probably didn't leave there until 2 o'clock in the morning. So one, she's exhausted, right? But then they give her the medicine to do the, you know, they had to re-break it in order to have a clean break, et cetera. And she's doing the spins.
Yes.
Ever seen the spins?
Uh-huh.
You're sitting up and your head just becomes sort of like this pendulum and you're just like, and she is just spinning wild. And she's, I just want to go home. Can we please go home? While she's doing the spins. Now, did I video record it? Of course I did.
Yeah.
Do they like to watch it every once in a while? Of course they do. But I'm not putting it out on Instagram Live. I feel like, Joshy, from a personnel standpoint, this is a good thing. Because I think Jaden Reed was going to be dealing with that foot injury, and he was going to work his way through it, and he was just going to deal with it, and he was going to be a good soldier, and he was going to show that he's a warrior and all of those sort of traditional athlete things. And the collarbone forced him to shut it down. That's the way I look at this. The collarbone, and I would rarely ever say this, was actually a fortuitous break for Jaden Reed because it forced him to address an issue that he didn't want to address this season.
Yeah, from my understanding of it, it was good to get, first of all, not that anyone here was denying Jason Wilde's reporting on the Jones fracture. It was good to get confirmation that there was something in that ankle, likely a Jones fracture, that needed to be operated on, and then for him to get it taken care of. I was frankly shocked with how good Jaden Reed looked in the first 2 weeks. Now, albeit he was out for a series in the second game, but he went from in a boot and visibly limping in camp to looking every bit as Jaden Reed as we remember. So that was interesting to me, but who knows what that ends up looking at like by week 6, 7, 8, 9, and then into the playoffs. The hopes for the Packers is to go far into the playoff, deep into the playoffs, and a nagging injury for Jaden Reed could eventually become an issue had it not been addressed. It seemed like he was fine dealing with it in the immediate, but I don't know how long that was going to last. The other good part of it is, with the addition of first-rounder Matthew Golden, Dontayvion Wicks seemingly has taken a step himself. Romeo Doubs has been useful for the Packers yet again. And the Christian Watson is going to be making his return soon. So the Packers really just have to tread water here for a couple weeks before they're seemingly as close to full strength as you could imagine. Not many wide receiver cores go five deep.
Well, you know what that means. Because I was going to make the same point that you just made. But you know what that means we have to do, right?
Uh-oh.
Cue it.
Chewy was right. Holy Chewy was right.
And I know this is tough for you. Because you have been on the other side of this thing when it comes to the depth of the wide receivers. And candidly, so have I, Joshy.
Yeah.
I have been on the other side and said, I saw this play. I saw this movie last year where we were like, oh, look at all the depth of these wide receivers, man. They're gonna death by a thousand cuts the rest of the league. And it didn't exactly work that way. So the addition of Matthew Golden got you and me excited because we were like, yes, bona fide stud, number one, no questions asked. But so far, it has been death by a thousand cuts. It has been spreading the ball around. Not one guy has emerged. And frankly, when you lose a guy like Jaden Reed and the conveyor belt just keeps on rolling, that is a luxury that the Packers have that not every other team. Man, I look at the Kansas City Chiefs right now, guys, and I go, they would kill for my kingdom for, to reference the title of the documentary on ESPN about the Chiefs, for this type of depth at that position.
Yeah, the thing I think every team in the NFL would drool at the depth the Packers have. The difference is, most teams believe they have higher top-end talent, and they would think there is an improvement there. But the Chiefs would kill to be four or five guys deep, because you're getting into names of guys who are being claimed like directly off of free agency. There's Kendrick Bourne signed a contract with the San Francisco 49ers. Tyquan Thornton signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. Those are all guys who were just freely available. So the Packers' depth is certainly a significant asset that they have. But I think Brian Gutekunst agrees with my side and maybe yours initially. Maybe you've backed off of it. Of, we still need a number one guy, because you don't invest a 22 overall pick to Matthew Golden for him not to be the leader for the passing corps.
I agree. I'm never going to sit here and say, actually, now that I've thought about it, why do we need Matthew Golden?
Right.
I'm certainly not there. I certainly think he is going to be a huge addition to this wide receiver core. What I'm saying is, when a guy like Jaden Reed goes out, when you're waiting for a guy like Christian Watson to come back, the way that Dontavian Wicks, the way that Romeo Doubs, the way that Tucker Kraft, the way that these guys, even to some extent, Savion Williams guys, and I'm not saying that he's had a huge impact, but the fact that the fact that he has been a productive addition to this group, it feels like that was not a mistake either. That they can rely on that depth, that they aren't a, you know, up a creek without a paddle type of thing just because Jaden Reed had collarbone / foot surgery, which, by the way, what a combo. What a combo, right? As somebody who has a broken collarbone, and I do mean has present day, an injury from 12 years ago now. Actually, hold on. Chase is 16. He was 14 years ago now. I wish I had gotten my collarbone fixed. Well,
is it just not connected?
Yeah, it's broken.
Huh.
I've never shown you my collarbone. Look at this. Here, I'll show you right now. I'll show you on the stream as well. Can you see this? Hold on. Can you see this little bump? Oh, the microphone is getting.
Yeah, I see it.
There. Everybody can see on the stream.
That should be a straight line, huh?
That should be straight, yeah.
Okay.
What do you see there? You get a little. You see the protrusion there?
Yes.
That's my collarbone. Just boop.
Okay.
Coming to say
hello. And you would need surgery to repair it?
So when I first broke it, it was a clean break.
Yeah.
And they were like, it'll heal on its own. And I was like, beautiful.
Didn't.
And then, no, I went for a run. And Chase was riding his little tricycle next to me, and we were going down a hill, and he panicked, and he turned the tricycle into me, just turned those handlebars right into me. So I did the thing where I'm like, jump, like leap, you know, up in the air to try to avoid the tricycle that is now coming at my ankles, and I ended up doing a somersault forward, and it just went and popped again.
Huh.
And that's when the doctor was like, you should get that fixed. If, again, if you're tuning into the YouTube stream, there's the old collarbone bump right there. The other side is much cleaner, straighter.
Yeah. Everything I know about collarbones, they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not. But the doctor said that they would have to plate it. I wonder if Jaden Reed has a plate now, having his collarbone fixed. And I said, what kind of plate? And they said, well, it would be a metal plate, and it'd be about 6 inches. And I said, I'm sorry, what?
Do you have that much room in that shoulder?
I certainly do not have that much space. I said, no, thank you. And here we are 14 years later. We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Adam Schefter is coming up next. We're going to ask him about Jaden Reed and what he thinks about him coming back and the Packers wide receivers. And also, what exactly is going on with the Packers backup quarterback situation? Details from Adam Schefter on that right after this. Do not miss a fresh farm-to-table dining experience unlike any other at Pottawatomie Casino Milwaukee. Gather and Grow is a limited-time showcase of foods from independent farms and producers all across our great state. Let's gather to celebrate the bounty of the state we call home. Tickets are available at Pottawatomie.com. That's Pottawatomie.com.
Everyone's go-to source for all NFL news.
And we're going to get right to some breaking news here that just came down. This tweet from Adam Schefter.
Adam's on the phone. Adam, yeah, you got more news? What do you got?
They're going with another move.
And here is the man who knows all, Adam Schefter.
It's ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter.
I would just say that right now I think all options are on the table. I think that they went through that trade thing and they talked to teams. And it's not like those talks are shut down, but they didn't go anywhere. And when they don't go anywhere, it opens up the possibility that he could be back.
Adam Schefter on JGC is sponsored by Island Resort and Casino. Gaming, casual, and fine dining. Two golf courses, a luxury spa, and live entertainment. Your total experience is at the Island. Also brought to you by Tony Wendorf and Associates. First Weber Real Estate Services. The real estate MVPs of Wisconsin. Get started today at WendorfTeam.FirstWeber.com.
It is that time. He is Adam Schefter. Good morning, Adam. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
What? Oh, no. Adam, can you hear me, Adam?
Got me.
Thank goodness.
There we go.
You're back. How are you?
It's nice to see Josh at the big boy table.
Uh-huh. They called me up.
We let him play.
It only takes two people to be missing for me to get the call. Actually, probably more than that if we do it all. But I'm here, and I'm happy to be talking to you, Adam.
Adam Schefter, we have a question for you about the Packers working out Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Now, I did a feature on Dorian Thompson-Robinson back in the day. Lovely young man. What exactly do you think the Packers are working on here? Do you think that there is a market for Malik Willis, and they are just preparing themselves if, in fact, they decide to trade him? How did you read this?
I read it as the fact that he was a guy that's been
around the league who has some skills and talents, who's available, and you go and work them out. Like, I don't think it's reflective of them looking to deal Malik Willis. Like, they're not trying to be cute or get disruptive on anything right now. This is a team that has built up a really strong roster. What are we trying to get cute for? Like, I just think here's a guy that they probably were intrigued by. He's got a skill set that they kind of like. You go work him out and maybe add him to your practice squad. I don't think it's anything more than that. I'm not looking for any meaning into working out Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Last night, Jaden Reed informed us that he had both successful surgery on his collarbone and in his foot, which would lead us to believe it was, in fact, the Jones fracture. Is the 6 to 8 week timeline still realistic there, or do we think the foot portion of it may have added some extra time for Jaden Reed to return?
You know, what's interesting about that is that I had heard over the summer that he needed foot surgery, and clearly he decided against it. But when you break the collarbone and you have to have it operated on, and you're going to be sidelined for however many weeks it is, well, you might as well go two for one and take care of two problems while you're laid up. And so that, I'm sure, is what he wound up doing. Like, he figured he could play through the foot injury, get around it, and it wouldn't be that big of an issue. But being that you're going to be operated on anyway, okay, let's see if we get the 2-for-1 special. You know, you get 50 off on the foot because they're doing the collarbone too, or whatever it may be. But you're out anyway, so you might as well get everything right so that you can come back full strength.
I said that, the old BOGO, buy one, get one. You know, since I'm here, maybe we take care of this as well. Adam, you were also talking about the tush push. Obviously, the Green Bay Packers were the team that presented that. It did not get passed. Where do you stand on the tush push again, thrusted into the conversation after the Eagles-Chiefs game?
Well, you know, I guess I said some things like the Chiefs or the Eagles won that game on Sunday when the play was not overturned at the owners' meetings in the spring. Mm-hmm. That's not anti-tush-push statement. That's, to me, a fact. Like, when the play was kept in the game, the Eagles' chances of winning these games improved. They're a better team when they can run that play because they've mastered the play. Nobody can stop the play. That's not a criticism of the play. That's not saying that the Eagles didn't make other plays that helped them win the game, that they're talented, that they don't deserve flowers else. But that play is dominant. Defenses don't know what to do with it. Officials don't seem like they know what to do with it. Nobody knows what to do with it except the Philadelphia Eagles, who have mastered it. That's not criticism. That's not anything that's debatable. That's just a reality. That's where we are. They've mastered it and nobody else has. So they have an advantage that nobody else does. Good for them. That's the way it is. And we'll see where the conversation goes. I'm sure it's going to come up again in the offseason. We'll see how that works out. But to their credit, they've mastered that play.
Have you heard, or do you think any of those owners that voted against banning it are regretting it after seeing the false starts and the lining up in the neutral zone that became such a focus of the conversation last weekend?
I don't know if they regret it, Josh. I think that everybody's kind of monitoring it and paying attention to it. It was an issue last offseason. I'm going to guess, based on the reaction that we've experienced through the early part of the season, that it's going to be an issue again this offseason. And I've always felt like that usually the league is pretty good at getting what it wants, whatever that means. Mm. And so if the league and Roger Goodell want this play out of the game, eventually my guess is that's what it'll be. But right now, it's legal. And as long as it's legal, that play poses a major threat to the Green Bay Packers, the Detroit Lions, the LA Rams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and every team that plans to challenge, contend, and compete with the Philadelphia Eagles for a spot in the Super Bowl.
Adam Schefter on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy is brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates. Just like their moves made in the pros, Tony Wendorf & Associates' First Weber Group helps people make their own big moves every day. Trusted knowledge, superior service, they're the real estate MVPs of Wisconsin. If you're looking to buy or sell a house, make the move and get in touch with Tony Wendorf & Associates.
Adam Schefter joining Jen, Gabe, and Chewy as he does each and every Wednesday. Adam, a lot of Tom Brady news over the past week or so. I want to begin with this Saudi Arabian league that he is sort of putting together, this tournament that he is putting together. It's now I saw that CeeDee Lamb has gotten permission to join this. Do you see this being something that happens year in and year out, or do you just think that this is a one-off? Because I get nervous, I'm going to be honest with you, if my players are playing in these sort of out-of-season tournaments, exhibitions, where there's a chance they could get injured, especially when the league is invested, the teams have invested so much money in these guys. Where do you stand on this thing going forward?
It's funny, because I posted about it on Monday night, and I was a little bit surprised at the reaction that it generated. You mentioned CeeDee Lamb, but here are some of the other names that are participating in it. Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Max Crosby, Rob Gronkowski, Sauce Gardner, Miles Garrett, others. There are coaches going, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan. So my first thought when I heard this and posted about it on Monday was, how much money are these guys being paid to go to Saudi Arabia in March to take part in a flag football league? Like, that is, I think, 2 weeks after free agency, about 10 days agency. Not that those players will be involved in it. Not that those coaches are concerned about it with their front offices running it. But my guess is that there's some real money that's involved to make this happen. Like, you see Saudi Arabia, you see Fanatics, and you see the people involved, and you're like, this is going to be a big money venture. Like, I'll just say this, like Fanatics Fest that they put on every year, they do a great job and they put some major money into that every year. So if it's in Saudi Arabia with all these people, that's what's going on again. Do I think it's going to turn into something? I think that they try it out initially, Jen, they see how the first year goes and then they say, okay, either it's successful or it's not, or we are determined to build this into something successful over time. We're going to do it every year or not. I don't know what its future is, being that I haven't seen the event. I haven't seen it take place. All I know is I'm sure there's some real financial backing behind it that if they decide they want to do it, would give it a chance.
But teams can say no, right? Like, that's the thing. Most of these players' contracts, I'm sure, have verbiage that state. Go ahead.
It depends on what they're doing. Like, again, I always go back to the former Patriot running back Robert Edwards, who won Rookie of the Year 1 year, and I was at the Pro Bowl. And literally right outside my hotel, he's on the beach playing a flag football game of some sort. And he tore up his entire knee on the beach and never was the same player ever again. So I'm sure these guys are going to be pretty smart about what they are and aren't doing. Look, the league is pushing for flag football in the Olympics in L.A. So, and the league is backing that, right? So you can't be the league and back Olympic football, flag football, and say, okay, we really want this to happen. We believe it's safe. But you can't do it in Saudi Arabia when you're being paid to do it, right? It can't go both ways, right? If you want your players to participate in flag football, well, then they should be allowed to participate in flag football.
Adam, who do you think has been the most impressive team through 2 weeks and the most disappointing?
Well, it's 2 weeks. Because last year, the New Orleans Saints might have been the most impressive team after 2 weeks, and a lot of them over the course of the season. So I think you just have to keep it in perspective. But through 2 weeks, the Green Bay Packers have been the most impressive team in football. They look like they're performing at another level. Again, the Saints were last year, didn't turn into much, didn't even make the playoffs. So it's just 2 weeks. But the Packers have been great so far, really impressive. Disappointing? Just take a look at any 0-2 team. Who are the 0-2 teams right now?
The Dolphins feel like the leader in that clubhouse.
Dolphins, Saints, Bears,
Browns.
I mean, honestly, any 0-2 team and say, like, this is disappointing because nobody wants to be in that spot.
Well, the Bears certainly could be a candidate there, given all of the excitement,
expectations.
Ben Johnson, they were going to turn things around. Like, first overall pick. Certainly could be something you argue.
You can make a case for any 0-2 team. Give me the 0-2 teams. And we'll give you a reason as to why they or like for any 0-2
okay,
team.
Okay, how about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Okay, by the way, they should be much better, right? Like, so you could say that they're the most disappointing because they have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid and had a chance to win against the Chargers, had a chance to win against the Eagles, and now are 0-2 for the first time since 2014. First time Patrick Mahomes, who turns 30 years old today, by the way. Happy birthday, Patrick. First time in his NFL career that Patrick Mahomes ever has lost three straight games. Never had done it before. Now has. That's got to be very disappointing to the Chiefs.
Last thing I have for you, Adam Schefter, is this Tom Brady saga with him, of course, being a minority owner of the Raiders and then, of course, being on the broadcast team for Fox. There's a lot of conversation about this being a conflict of interest, the information that he gathers on these Zoom meetings, because apparently he's not doing the meetings in person. Where do you stand on that? Do you think Tom Brady is gaining an advantage by being able to get information at these production meetings, albeit virtual, and then passing that information on to his cohorts that are running the Raiders?
Jen, I think you've probably been a part of production meetings, right? So
plenty
I would say if you are a part of production meetings, which I've been allowed to be involved in only in a few over the course of my 35 plus years covering the NFL. But when I did sidelines for NFL Network, I did some of these meetings. And by the way, when I did sidelines for NBA games on ESPN, we would do some meetings with coaches. It always blew me away. 30 minutes, an hour before the game, you're sitting there talking about, you know, what's going to happen. I was like, wow, this is incredible. But I think that information, all that information is an advantage for anybody to hear, which is why they do those meetings. Now, I don't think that Tom Brady is going to hear something in those meetings. This is me. This is like, oh boy, this team doesn't think much of its own player. We're going to try to trade for him. Or this team thinks this guy is going to be a superstar. We're going to try to trade for him. And you know what? If there's something there that is so sensitive, that team shouldn't be sharing it with Tom and his team in the production meeting. So I understand the image and the perception that exists. I got it. There's a lot of people that are sensitive about it, understandably so. Me, I look at it a different way. I think people get worked up over this a little bit more than they should. I think, you know, but then again, let me give you an example. I was saying this to a coach in the league. I go, hey, Tom Brady's pretty professional. You think he's going to go take something and use that to his advantage? He goes, well, what would you say about Spygate and Deflategate? I'm like, okay, well, that again, that's how some people feel. I can't argue with that. Those things happen. But I just don't think that what are you going to hear in that production meeting, Jen, that you think you're going to turn around and give to the Raiders that's going to be a huge advantage to that team? You tell me.
Well, like, the only thing I can think of right now, and again, I'm certain that there are things. To your point, you have to probably be judicious with what you're sharing with any broadcast. And we saw that, Josh, you were just referencing, you know, Matt LaFleur regretted mentioning to the Fox broadcast that he prayed whenever the kicker went out there. Was that Anders Carlson? And I was at Auburn yesterday, by the way.
Uh-huh.
whenever Anders Carlson would go out there, he would pray. And then Tom Rinaldi reported that in a sideline hit. And Matt LaFleur regretted having shared that sort of tongue in cheek comment with the reporter, you know, so like there are certainly aspects where that happens with just the regular media, the rest of us out there. But I wonder about like injuries, you know, a lot of these coaches sort of keep that stuff very close to the vest, but they may tell the broadcast team so that those guys can prep for the backups, right? Because a lot of times your depth of knowledge only goes so far and you maybe haven't, you don't have nuggets or details or info on like the third guy on the depth chart. But if he's thrust into action, sometimes you get a heads up from the team that that's going to be the case going forward. And again, I don't know how that affects it going forward. I just think the whole thing is fascinating. I think it's so interesting that we have this sort of sweet spot where the broadcaster and the minority owner are the same person.
Look, I would say this. I've always viewed it on the rare times that I've got to sit in production meetings. It's a privilege to me. It's a privilege to be that privy and have access to that much information. And I also know that when you're sitting down with those people, or whether I'm on the phone with a head coach or a GM or an assistant coach, that they get to say what they want. They're not going to tell me everything all the time. They're not going to say, hey, we're thinking about making this huge trade of Micah Parsons, okay? They don't want me to know certain things. And I would say it's the same thing for Tom in those production meetings. If there's something that is so sensitive that you don't want him to know, don't share it. That's all. It's not that hard. But I understand why people get worked up about it.
Adam, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Kept you a little long today, but we appreciate you. You're a pro as always. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, everybody. Keep up the good work, Josh.
That's Adam Schefter. How about that?
What a shout out.
You clip that for Joshy. Yeah. We'll clip it. We're going to use it on the show. Whenever Joshy makes a salient point, we're going to play Keep Up the Good Work, Josh. Keep Up the Good Work, Josh.
That's a cosign I don't know if I ever expected.
I mean, again, feather in your cap, pal.
I'll take it. Adam Schefter is also brought to us by the Island Resort and Casino. Looking for it all in one trip? The Island Resort and Casino has you covered. Championship golf, gaming, spa, dining, and live entertainment all in one epic destination. Book your total experience now at islandresortandcasino.com.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
All right?
Yeah.
Kind of like a, oof, like just, instead of a, huh.
Yeah. But that's all part of taking the training law.
I do, but it's just such funny noises.
Did this get sexual or something? I don't know about it. What the hell just happened?
On 94.5 ESPN.
Did you know the Great Midwest Bank is celebrating 90 years of serving southeastern Wisconsin homeowners? That's a long history of helping families right here in our community. I have experienced it myself. We obviously have our mortgage through Great Midwest Bank, but they also have checkings and savings and 24/7 mobile banking. It is all so convenient, but it still comes with that personal touch from real people who understand your real needs. That's why I trust Great Midwest Bank. You can find a location at greatmidwestbank.com. Great Midwest Bank, your simply local equal housing lender and member FDIC. Look, I recognize as we talk about conflict of interest, the challenge of asking Adam Schefter, Michigan man, about Tom Brady, Michigan man, right? I think they're probably pals. I kind of side with the average Joe. I kind of side with the fan who says, what the heck is going on over here? Because they showed it on Monday night, right? They show Tom Brady up there in the suite with the decision makers. He's obviously a minority owner of the Raiders. And when you think about the access that he has to other teams, to the operation, to the week-by-week plans, it is different than any other owner, minority or otherwise, Joshy, in the league. Now, having been in these production meetings before, I guarantee, not always, but occasionally, there is a little hero worship going on. Tom Brady walks in the room with all of his rings and all of his, you know, cheekbones. And I think there are probably some people who give up more information than they would like to. I think there's a little bit of like trying to impress Tom Brady. Look what we got going on. Oh, here's the game plan. Here's the first 15 or whatever you end up diarrhea of the mouthing. But I would advise the people in those meetings, head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive player, a lot of times it's quarterbacks, to keep things close to the vest when you have a guy like Tom Brady, who is part owner of another team in the league, taking your information.
The big issue to me is the potential for Tom Brady to manipulate a coach or coordinator or player into divulging information they usually wouldn't have, and his ability to be using that question asking and answer for ulterior motives. He could launder it as this is related to the broadcast and something that is going to be meaningful to the game, but he could then immediately turn around and use that to his advantage. I'm having a hard time exactly picking out what that would be, but somebody who came up via the Patriots and their, let's say, their interest in trying to skirt rules and find advantages with every single opportunity, I have to imagine Tom Brady has taken some of that on and adopted that into how he views football and how he talks and thinks about it. I don't know. I think the big thing that changed it a lot was him being in that coach's box. If he were just in the owner's box, it would be different. But him there with a headset on, I believe, was the picture. And amongst those guys, it seems to be a conflict of interest and probably something that the NFL shouldn't be allowing to happen just because the potential. He may never get a piece of information that's useful, and it might affect his broadcast, his partner, and the way they sound. If it gets to a point where people think he's trying to take advantage of them, then no one's going to talk to him because NFL teams treat stuff like absolute trade secrets. It's Fort Knox with some information. So I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't know if it's going to be heard on the broadcast or noticed.
I mean, to your point about Fort Knox, Jordan Love was on the Rich Eisen show yesterday on ESPN Radio, and he was talking about how he didn't even know that the Micah Parsons thing was happening. Yep. You know, so like when you talk about keeping things close to the vest, obviously some teams are better at it than others. The Packers, I believe, are masters of it. They have really locked things up. I've told you guys that. I've got pals in the business who are always trying to excavate information, and it's like, it's tough. You know, they've made a decision. We are, you know, it's us versus them. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, works for them. But not every organization is going to be operating that way. And I think you make a great point. It is hard to nail down specifically what information he can gather on a week-by-week basis that he could then take back to the Raiders and help them make them a better team. But on the off chance that something is revealed, is Tom Brady going to say, gosh, you know what? That's probably not something that I should pass on to my Raiders cohorts. That's probably, you know what? They probably wouldn't want us to know that. Or would it change the way he encourages his people to operate? And again, right now the information is all hypothetical. It's all speculative. It's all, you know, sort of a guessing game. But when it does arrive, I can't help but wonder how Tom Brady will handle that, as he has one foot in the broadcasting space and one foot in the owner space.
You guys know what team this immediately potentially affects, right?
No.
No, tell me.
Tom Brady is calling the Bears-Cowboys game at Soldier Field this Sunday, and then the Bears play the Raiders the following week in week four.
Interesting. The thing that I think is the potential issue is if a player gets asked about or a certain weakness and a coach like waivers or shows uncertainty, that's information that can be taken back. Like, hey, on this, I've noticed these things. What are you guys doing to improve it? And a hemming and hawing could be like, hey, we need to attack this and make him prove it. Because, I mean, he's watching the sport. I mean, all athletes do. You listen to Chewy talk. They watch it different than we do. And they are more in tune with the finer things and the small differences that make big differences when they are exploited. So I think that information, even somebody being reticent to answer something in an off-the-record or behind-the-scenes conversation can be used as information.
All you need to know is that the NFL has a rule prohibiting him from going to these meetings.
Yeah.
That is already in place. That rule would not exist unless they believed there was a chance that these two things could be a conflict of interest. Now, again, it's 2025. You can do these things over Zoom. It sounds like that's what Brady is doing. He also has a ton of relationships in the league where he could be talking off the record about a number of different things with people. But it is just such an interesting space to exist in today, where one of your top broadcasters in the country on the NFL is also making decisions and contributing to the growth and prosperity of an NFL team. And I just don't know how you look at it and go, meh. No big deal. Why are we worried? I'm sure it's nothing. That's just me. Jen, Gabe, and Chewy rolls on. Stick around.